AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. Pope Francis, who battled pneumonia for the past few months, died today. The Vatican released his death certificate showing the 88-year-old suffered a cerebral stroke. ABC's Terry Moran has more on his life.
All those unforgettable moments of Pope Francis, the way that he went to a war zone, that he brought refugees back to his own house in Rome, and all those gestures, that's really his legacy, not hammered out in writing in church doctrine, but in the witness that he bore with his own personal example. The question is, personalities come and go. It's doctrine that survives. And what will come next is a question before the church.
The Vatican released the Pope's will and also stated he wants his funeral to reflect his humble life. Following the Pope's public funeral, cardinals will convene to choose his successor. President Trump today ordering flags be lowered to half staff in his honor. The president will also attend the Pope's funeral. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Thunderstorms producing large hail reportedly caused extensive property damage across southern Wisconsin. Consumers whose vehicles were damaged will likely seek out repair contractors, but they should practice caution while doing so. Many vehicle owners may be in need of an auto body shop for hail damage repairs. Consumers seeking repairs to their motor vehicle should work with their insurance company to select the repair shop if the work will be covered by insurance. Ask for recommendations from friends, family, and other people they trust. Search for online reviews of the company and contact DATCAP's Bureau of Consumer Protection to check if a specific shop has a record of complaints. Document all communications, transactions, and experiences, including dates, times, expenses, and the names of shop staff. Unauthorized repairs or price increases after the consumer received an estimate or quote are not allowed. A shop may hold a vehicle until the consumer pays for repairs that were authorized, but cannot keep it if the consumer refuses to pay for unauthorized repairs. After work is complete, the shop must provide an invoice describing all repairs, replaced parts, and their cost and labor charges. The man accused in the abduction of a pregnant Wisconsin teenager had his initial appearance Thursday in Dodge County Court. Court Commissioner Stephen Symes set bail for 40-year-old Gary Day at $2 million cash. Symes said Day presents an extreme flight risk and an extreme risk to this victim and other potential victims. Day is charged with child enticement and child abduction for allegedly taking 17-year-old Sophia Franklin from her Beaver Dam home in early February. He's the father of the teen's unborn child. Day arrested earlier this month at an Omaha truck stop also faces federal charges in his home state of Arkansas. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Brewers clobber the A's. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers had a season-high 16 hits on the way to a 14-1 win over the A's. Milwaukee stole 9 bases in the game, 6 of them in just one inning, both franchise records. The Brewers' Sal Frelick.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that every team and every catcher thinks that, like whether we're stealing or not, just being at first base or second base, the pitcher and catcher thinking about you is a success.
Manager Pat Murphy.
I think that's one of the ways we win. You know, we win by collecting hits, taking walks, stealing bases, having the threat to steal, which gives you a better pitch to hit sometimes. And that's one of the ways we can beat you.
The Crew in San Fran tonight against the Giants. NBA, Bucks getting ready for game 2 tomorrow night after losing 117-98 Saturday to the Pacers.
I think we were late. We didn't have enough urgency. Going to game 2, hopefully we can improve that or we can change that. We'll see. But going to game 2, we're going to be better.
That's Giannis Antetokounmpo with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Still battling a brutal wind today, gusting up to 30 to 40 miles per hour under mostly cloudy skies. High temperatures stay mild though, scraping the low 50s before we warm things up to about the mid-60s tomorrow. But chances of scattered showers and some thunderstorms. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 52.
Matt Nair on air.
Deb Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters talking about the SAVE Act.
The kind of voter fraud that this SAVE Act is targeting would be non-citizen voter fraud.
There is no evidence of this. Zero.
Non-citizens, no. They're not eligible to vote.
There is no reason to increase these restrictions on voting except to stop people who might not vote for them.
Matt Nair on air. Moving soon to its new time. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
If you could change your name, if you could pick your own name, what would you change it to? Daniel Wheeler says, linguistically, Pete's last name is interesting because it requires a wet mouth. Requires a wet mouth to pronounce it correctly. Pete Schwalbe, you have to have a wet mouth to say that? That sounds so perverse, Daniel.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Maggie Dawn.
What does Justice Alito have in common with the Wisconsin Supreme Court liberal bloc? We discuss at the top of the show next.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
Yeah.
Greetings and welcome to the Civic Media Radio Hours here at the 4 o'clock time slot here in the afternoon. I'm your host this afternoon here. My name is Dan Schaefer. Thank you all so much for joining us. If you're unfamiliar with me or my work, I am the political editor here at Civic Media. I am also the founder of the Recombobulation Area. Yes, not the official Recombobulation Area at the airport, but I've named my news and politics newsletter after the famous pro-security location at the airport because we have such a discombobulating politics here in the state of Wisconsin. We all need a place to piece everything back together, a place to recombobulate. So that's what we're going to be doing with you here on the Civic Media Radio Hours, and we're just going to get right to it here because we have some guests joining us in studio. First, I want to introduce my co-host for the afternoon, Miss Angela Lang, the Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Thank you so much for being here, Angela.
Of course. Always a good time hanging out with you.
Always a good time. And today we also, before we get to our guests here, I want to let you know that we have a new weekday lineup coming up for the Wisconsin News Talk Radio Stations Network, including a fresh 3-hour morning show, Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, and the Maggie Dawn Show is moving to the evening drive time slot. Yes, that's this very time slot right here from 4 to 6 p.m. So when you tune in on Wednesday, you will be hearing Maggie Dawn and the Maggie Dawn Show in this time slot. But first, we have some special guests with us in studio today. The Milwaukee Film Festival begins on April 24th and runs to May 8th. Civic Media is an official media partner of the event, and the Recombobulation Area is a community partner on two documentaries, Separated and Death and Taxes. But today we are here to talk about another documentary, one that is a bit closer to home. The film is called Cycle. It is more than 5 years in the making, and it is making its world premiere at the Milwaukee Film Festival on Sunday, May 4th, with additional screenings on the 6th and 7th. The documentary tells the urgent and symbolic story of Tyrese West, an 18-year-old black teenager from Racine, Wisconsin, whose life was cut short by a police officer in 2019. The co-directors of the film are here with us in studio at Radio Park in Racine today. So welcome to Racine natives, Laura Diane Kesman and William Howell. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So First, I got a chance to watch some of the film. I didn't get a chance to watch all of it just yet, but it is remarkably powerful. Mm-hmm. And there is just so much to talk about with this film. So first, maybe we could start by just giving our listeners a little bit of a backstory here. How did you start working on this film? Or when did you start working on this film? And how did it all come together? What's the story of how this got made?
Well, when... When was that? 2019, Juneteenth Day, June 15th in 2019, when Tyrese West lost his life. The shocking thing for me is when I seen his picture come down my timeline, he looked exactly like his father. Mm-hmm. Me and his father were best friends when we were in middle school. And so for me, it just kind of like really struck a chord in my heart. And growing up with Monique West as well, like, you know, in Racine, we, like I said, this small town, we have like just a real tight-knit community. So I really felt the responsibility to speak, to use my voice, you know, that I had. And for me, I was just starting to film things. Like, I mean, I wasn't a filmmaker, but I just picked up a camera and I started to film, like, just whatever was happening. And so for me, it was just kind of a natural process to film it. But as it started to kind of erupt on my timeline, I didn't know what to do. So I just started to like reach out to certain people and I prayed a lot that I would just kind of like meet somebody who could teach me about film or documentary work. And I was working with Jesse Booker at the time. We had a website called rapscene.com for all the rappers in Racine. And out the blue, he reaches out to me and he's like, dude, you need to call my friend. She has another friend that works at the radio station. She's a filmmaker. And I'm just like, what's the odds of this? Mm-hmm. Right. So I reached out to her friend Amanda, and then Amanda told me, like, yeah, my friend, she's a real dope filmmaker. She's in radio. Like, maybe that could even help a lot right now. And she sent me a link. She said, watch her documentary. And I watched the documentary. It's called Invisible Lines. And when I tell you, I was blown away. And, you know, it's just one of those moments where you feel God speaking to you, like he's just leading you all the way there. And so it was just natural for me to reach out to her and just see if I could get her to get on board.
That's remarkable. That's a great story. And now here you are with just, you know, what, less than 2 weeks away from the premiere.
Crazy.
Yeah, what, wild.
To, you know, walk me through the journey that brought you to the point where you've, you know, made this film and now you're ready to show it to the world.
Well, I think the journey is a little bit hard to synopsize because it's been such a storied journey getting it to this point. But, you know, the starting point was really Will and I meeting for that first time at a coffee shop in 2019 in the fall, shortly after District Attorney Patricia Hansen decided to not file charges against the officer. And so this happened just a couple months after that, where Will and I had a three-hour conversation, and we emerged as co-directors on this project. And, you know, keep in mind, this was the end of 2019. This was before COVID. The before times, you know, before, you know, the world was a captive audience to witnessing, you know, the uprising of the summer of 2020 unfold in the way that it did, you know, and that was a huge... you know, a huge thing that shaped the direction of the narrative, but we, you know, we couldn't have anticipated the direction that it would go ultimately and what would bring us here today.
Yeah, I had a chance to watch the film this afternoon, and everyone that's listening needs to see it and then like bring a friend and also see it. And I think this is a story that's important. And it's also heartbreaking. Like, it was one of those movies you sit down and it's over and the credits are rolling and you're kind of just sitting there and, you know, you're processing. And I'm a crier, so I was just like crying. And I think what was very unique about this that I think is different from other stories that are similar is the backdrop of Juneteenth and understanding. And there was even talks and mentions of kind of the evolution of law enforcement from slave patrols, and to know that this happened on Juneteenth, and the film being called Cycle, right? So I wanted to just like make space to kind of talk about how that extra element and how that tied into history kind of adds to that like psychological pain that I think folks were talking about in the film as well.
For me, I think it's even a tad bit deeper because Juneteenth Day becomes so synonymous with everything we are when you live in Racine.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it was the first day that was just like, that you didn't anticipate, like the 4th of July or Christmas or something like that. And it was just like, it was just sprung on you.
Yeah.
And you didn't expect it. And it was just like, it left memories in your mind that you made sure that it's the reason why we go to Juneteenth Day every year.
Mm-hmm.
Because like that first time just like blows you away. And so, yeah, for us to experience something so tragic on a day that's so special, that did leave like this stain on us, it makes the movie, it makes it just that much more powerful. It made the moment that much more powerful, mm-hmm. and that's why it spoke to me so deeply as well. And I think that it is a deep connection for a more universal message,
mm-hmm.
with people in other cities, worldwide, because you know the day is so significant for us.
We're here in studio talking with the filmmakers behind the documentary Cycle, which has its world premiere at the Milwaukee Film Festival coming up on Sunday, May 4th. Now, you know, you mentioned kind of in the synopsis of this film that, you know, the police shooting of Tyrese West made news here in southeastern Wisconsin, but did not really become a viral story nationally the way so many of these other cases did around that time. So, given that, you know, the fact that the national spotlight wasn't necessarily on this case, as you investigated it for the documentary, what were some of the more surprising elements that you encountered here?
Well, I think that, you know, we went into this film knowing that, yes, this is about the story of Tyrese West, but in so many ways, it's so much more than that. And I think really a huge takeaway for us was uncovering that Tyrese really represents all of the names that we don't know, all of the names that don't become hashtags and don't go viral, because of the exception of having witnesses or video or audio evidence. None of that existed with Tyrese. And as we investigated his case specifically, what we end up unraveling is how the larger systemic issue is constructed and intertwined, and how accountability really is not even baked into the system in the first place. And so Tyrese's story really helps us unravel that and get a very clear understanding of, you know, what the likelihood is from the outset, like from the second that something like this happens, and how the scene is processed, and who is leading the investigation, and what communication channels travel from the crime scene to the media and the general public, what that pipeline is. That is something that I think is critical to understand how we got here in the first place. And Andrea, you mentioned, you know, going back decades and centuries of understanding how far back this cycle goes. That's very much, you know, part of the intention is to help people draw the historical parallels between one isolated incident in Racine that is an example of how easy it is for these cases to be, you know, very quietly sort of swept under the rug when the authorities have full narrative control.
Mm-hmm.
And then the legacy of what has been happening for centuries.
It's a powerful story, and I encourage people to go check it out at the Milwaukee Film Festival. The film is Cycle. We're here with the filmmakers behind that documentary here. We're going to be going to break just for a minute, but we will be back with more discussion about this film after that break. So join the conversation with us. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on YouTube. All the socials. Do all the things. And we'll continue this conversation, and we will be right back. Stick with us.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
Chuck McDowell here. If you were misled or lied to in any way when buying a timeshare, right now is your wake-up call. With the tariffs, economy tanking, and inflation rising, you might need to ask yourself this question. Is owning a timeshare a good idea? With all the economic uncertainty, you need to protect yourself and your family. Don't look back and say, if I'd have only got rid of that stupid timeshare they lied to me about. It's time to stop thinking about canceling your timeshare and finally get rid of it and be smart with your money. At Wesley Financial Group, we've saved 48,000 families an average of $65,000 in lifetime payments. Give us a call. I guarantee if we take you as a client, we will cancel your timeshare permanently or you'll pay nothing.
Call Wesley for your free timeshare exit kit. 800-489-7733. 800-489-7733. 800-489-7733.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Anne from Chippewa Falls.
What are Republicans voting for? If they're not voting for Medicare, Medicaid, clean energy, clean water.
Tax cuts for billionaires. You wouldn't get a lot of votes for that. So you have to create an enemy. And somebody says, blame all these people like women and immigrants and black and brown folks. Your brain will sometimes want to accept that because it's the easiest of off ramps to all of the anxiety and existential fear that you've got.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Moving soon to its new time. Weekdays 4 until 6 on Civic Media and on the app.
News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Radio Hours. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm your guest host this afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us. We are joined in studio by the filmmakers behind the documentary Cycle, which premieres on Sunday, May 4th at the Milwaukee Film Festival. We're here with Racine natives, Laura Diane Kesman and William Howell, the co-directors of this film. So first, just give our listeners a quick, you know, kind of zoom out synopsis of what this case exactly was before we, you know, talk further a little bit about the film here.
Well, the case of Tyrese West was you have this 18-year-old kid who was shot and killed basically for not having a light on his bike. And what it was like 96 days after 96 days of unrest in the city. And ultimately, they chose not to charge the officer. And that's why we're here today.
You know, we were just talking during the break about how I just only saw this film just a few hours ago. And so I'm still processing, and I feel very like lucky to be able to process with the co-directors of the film. And so I'm from Milwaukee, right? So I'm driving here. And, you know, there's a part in the film where I believe it was Corey Prince had mentioned how he, and there's this picture with him and the governor, and how, you know, he does tremendous, amazing work. But at the end of the day, as a black person, you still, your heart still sinks when you see a cop car. And even myself driving here, I saw Caledonia police just sitting there, and I had that same feeling, right? It's just almost like a instinctual thing that I think a lot of black folks have, just this inherent trauma. And I do a lot of stuff all the time, right? And, you know, I empathize with Corey of saying, you know, you can do tremendous work. You can do, you can use your voice and your platinum or your platform in a really responsible way, but also at the same time, that will not protect you. That will not shield you at the end of the day. And, you know, thinking about, you know, just the title, like Cycle, right? And I know this is going to be a very big question, but in your opinion, as we kind of talked before the break about how history, there's kind of this through line of, you know, slave patrol, the evolution to sheriffs and police. How do we break the cycle?
For me, I'm just trying to create understanding. I think understanding is the key, because if we understand each other more, then we're less likely to react certain ways in certain situations. My grandfather raised me in a house with white women and all kind of different color people because he wanted me to have different perspectives on life and a comfort in knowing how different you are and that it's okay to be different and it's okay to accept people and their differences.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think a lot of times, whether it's Tyrese West or Eric Geezy, you know, sometimes we're just not familiar enough with each other or with those communities or how each other, you know, culturally,
mm-hmm.
how we might react in certain situations. And so I think that this film starts to open doors and conversations for all of those things, because at the end of the day, I think understanding is definitely what we need. I didn't understand. I was just angry at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I didn't want to be the one to make the film. And I really wanted to search somebody out because it would have been an angry film. I was angry. And so at this point, we have a true piece of work that truly breaks down the entire cycle instead of just being caught in a small town, small moment of just pure anger and rage. And we have something that is truly remarkable.
Yeah, because you talked about in the documentary, you were doing videos like every day mm-hmm. on your own social media accounts to talk about what was happening.
Right.
But to have this, you know, almost 6 years later now, right, to really zoom out, does it give you a different understanding? Yeah. Does it give you a different perspective?
I mean, definitely. Definitely. And I mean, even in the film, you'll see that you'll get a chance to hear my voice in 2019 and then you'll hear me in 2025 and you'll be able to see the difference for yourself. I think until you experience something like this, like you just never know what God is preparing you for or to bring you through. And so this moment, it kind of just capitalizes on all those things, you know. And yeah, it's an unbelievable moment. I could have never imagine being here right now, you know, all those years ago.
What's the one thing you want folks to take away from the film?
Well, I guess going off of that is, you know, the understanding that we're trying to elicit and pose the cycle being broken as almost like a personal choice that you have to make in your own mind. And that was not obvious when we started this, going back to the journey and going back to, you know, the emotion that really drove the beginning of this and everything that we learned along the way. I think, you know, things did not go as expected. You know, it's like, did we want, you know, hard-lined accountability in the form of, you know, there being some type of... you know, at the very least, like, get this guy fired, right? Like, right, like right. You know, but when you realize that, you know, and Will says it really poignantly at the very end of the film, but essentially, like, you take what they give you, and anything beyond that, you have to reconcile within your own heart and your own self of how to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, you know, my goal was to really help elicit like a genuine understanding between, you know, among all sides,
mm-hmm.
In order to, you know, again, like break the cycle in our own minds first.
Yeah. I think, you know, the goal of it being understanding is something, it's more than a personnel change or even a policy change or something like that. It's a mindset change. It's a cultural change when you have that goal of understanding. So I think, you know, as I've been watching the film, as Angela talked about watching the film, there's so much to it. And it's I really think it's a really, really terrific piece of work. And I really encourage people to go check it out at the film festival and to, you know, seek out that understanding that is the goal of this film and not necessarily to, you know, get riled up and get polarized and post the hashtags, but look for understanding. And I appreciate that as, you know, a core element of what you're doing here with this documentary. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here. Again, the film is called Cycle. It premieres at the Milwaukee Film Festival on Sunday, May 4th. Lauren William, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
All right, we will be right back. And after the break, we will be joined by Joe Zepecki, who is running for chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Stick with us here on Civic Media.
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Thursday's Wisconsin Elections Commission meeting to review a complaint regarding uncounted ballots in Madison took a heated turn. Commissioner Bob Spindell wanted to talk about Milwaukee over the objections of Commission Chair Ann Jacobs. As Spindell read from a prepared statement, Jacobs repeatedly ruled he was out of order, at one point pounding her gavel and threatening to eject him from the meeting. Spindell, a Republican appointee on the six-member commission, was attempting to bring up the Milwaukee's ballot shortage from the April election, which Jacobs, a Democratic appointee, noted was not on the agenda. In small cities and rural areas that lack child care access, Governor Tony Evers says school districts may be the solution to filling those gaps. Evers says state funding is vital, comparing child care to public infrastructure. Evers has proposed $480 million for child care providers in his state budget. The governor was in Barron on Wednesday touring the city's new Main Street and promoting clean drinking water initiatives. The Democratic governor also said that migrant workers without legal status are vital to the state's economy and urged the Trump administration to continue federal funding for infrastructure projects in the states. The legislature's Joint Legislative Audit Committee will hold a hearing on Wisconsin DEI audits. Republican committee co-chairs Senator Eric Wimberger and Representative Robert Wittke say the hearing will be held next Wednesday at the Capitol. Audits released last week found that state agencies and the universities of Wisconsin failed to track money spent on diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. In a statement, Wimberger and Wittke say agencies pushing DEI initiatives need to be held accountable. The audit showed that the UW system spent $12.5 million related to salaries and compensation for roles with DEI functions. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Since we haven't heard Glenn Powell news in about 4 seconds, here is an update. The highly in-demand actor will co-write and star in a new comedy about a country western music star. Powell is partnering with Judd Apatow, with whom he will share writing credit for the script. Apatow, whose credits include The 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up, will direct. Powell's most recent credits were Hitman and the blockbusters Twisters and Top Gun 2. A legacy drummer is out of a job. The Who has decided to part ways with Zach Starkey after almost 30 years following a performance at the Royal Albert Hall in London. Starkey is the son of Beatles drummer Ringo Starr and the godson of original Who drummer, the late Keith Moon. Starkey apparently got into it on stage with lead singer Roger Daltrey. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds tonight, some showers possible late, and lows in the upper 30s. For tomorrow, early showers, then sunshine for the afternoon, highs in the upper 60s. Another rain chance late Wednesday and Thursday. Highs jump up into the low 70s. Right now it's 53.
Carmelo Anthony for The Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presume innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the in-cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
More than 600 international students and recent grads have had their visas revoked. Here's people that are here 100% legally. We've seen the ICE checklist. Do you wear a Chicago Bulls hoodie? Do you have a tattoo? Check, check, gone. Again, this is about due process and following the Constitution. And if we don't have that, then none of us are safe.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Moving soon to its new time. Weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we talk all things Wisconsin and the news with Pat Kreitlow, host of Up North News Radio. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Radio Hours. I'm your guest host this afternoon. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am joined by my co-host today, Angela Lang, the Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. And because I'm guest hosting today, you're just going to get a lot of 90s alternative rock.
I'm here for it. I love it.
That's what we're here for. That's my jam. I am at my core of just like an alt-rock doofus, you know, so that's why.
It's a good era of music, let's be real.
It really is. It really is. Still my favorite band of all time, Nirvana, playing us in from the break here.
Solid.
But you know, enough goofing around here. We got to get to our guest here for the next portion of the show. We have Joe Zepecki, who is has been in the news a little bit lately because he's running for chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Mr. Zepecki, thank you so much for joining us here on Civic Media.
Mr. Zepecki, so formal. I didn't think my dad was on the show today. Hey, I'm happy to just talk about like Yellow Jackets needle drops for the whole half hour. The 90s music is A-OK over here, too.
Another thing we agree on. So you're running for chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. You announced this last week. What has the response been like to your launch for this campaign?
It's been fantastic. You know, I didn't want to charge right into this. This is not about me. This is about where we go as a party. And so after Ben Wickler made the announcement that he was going to step down after six very successful years and a lot of races won, I spent the week talking to folks from across the state, from every part of our coalition, Black, white, rural, urban, gay, straight, you know, old, young, like across the board. It's really important to me that we keep everybody together at this incredible moment. And the response was overwhelming. And it was frankly a little bit more than I anticipated. Voices calling for change, for improving the way we do things, like our organizing model, like support county parties and neighborhood teams. And so with that and my background in communications, and I think everyone's agreement that the Democratic Party needs to find a way to communicate our values and our message better. I've got a lot of thoughts about that. We can get into some of it. And so I, you know, with a lot of encouragement and with a big team of 20 endorsers on day one, rolled out, and it's been building ever since. We just released 7 more new folks from Rock County and Milwaukee and elsewhere just last night. So it's been going great so far, and there's a lot of work to do, and I want to continue to hear from people across our coalition from all corners of the Democratic Party to teach me what I don't know and make me smarter. That's how we got to do this.
Yeah, I want to start by like full disclosure. I did endorse Joe Zepecki.
You were on that list of 20 people endorsing Joe Zepecki.
On day one. I want to make that known, on day one. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to ask him the tough questions. Like, I've worked with Zepecki, and I think that's how we've maintained such a good relationship through that. But I think a question a lot of folks are asking right now is like, how are we going to promote bolder leadership amongst like elected officials to like meet the moment? But then I think there's also been sometimes, and we've talked about this, Dan, that Dems seem to sometimes negotiate against themselves, right? How can we kind of enter this new phase of leadership in supporting elected officials to meet the moment with bolder actions?
This is not a time to be timid. And I've heard it said in the last couple of days that if we're all just a little bit brave, nobody needs to be the hero. It ain't gonna be, there's nobody coming to save us, right? This is not about one person. It has to be about all of us. If you are not satisfied with the leadership you are getting from your elected representatives, if you are not satisfied with your elected representatives supporting a particular person for continued leadership roles in our party when they're 140 years old, say so. That's okay. We can figure this out on our team, how we most effectively stand up as this Trump administration takes a blowtorch to the Constitution, to fundamental American values in a way that is scaring people, in a way that is like genuinely frightening. When you can take a student who is here on a legal visa in the dead of night, sneak up on her and snatch her, and like that is as un-American as it gets. When you can rendition Albrego Garcia, a union apprentice, to a gulag in El Salvador without due process, we have lost our way. And no one of us can do all of the things, but we have to start by using our voices. One of the ways I think we do that is as a party, we empower more messengers. It doesn't have to be elected people who speak for us. Mm-hmm. We all, across this pro-democracy movement, have a voice, and we have more tools at our disposal than ever before to use it. What I want to see the Democratic Party do is support folks. If they say, hey, I got something to say, we're going to teach and support you in saying it. We're going to build new ways to get to people, because we are where the change is going to come from. And it starts by standing up and demanding it. We're seeing that at hands-off protests. We're hearing it in roundtable discussions about what happens when Medicaid gets cut by $800 billion. Like, it takes all of us. Angela knows this about me. I'm a coach. And like, to me, it's like, this is a team. This is a team game, and it takes all of us. We got a spot for everybody on our team.
Well, I coached first grade girls basketball this year, so we're both coaches.
I love it.
Yeah.
Coach Dan.
That's right. So one of the things that you put out in some of you in a press release when you were, you know, talking about running for DNC or WISDEM's chair was about what you characterized as fundamentally reshaping how we communicate our values. One of the things you've really talked a lot about is that communication aspect, is that media aspect of it. And why do you think that is such a priority for you? Why is that, you know, been such a big part of what you've had to say in the early goings of this, I guess, campaign? Do you characterize it as? Yeah.
Yes. Well, listen, like, let's acknowledge April 1st was a great day and we had a big win, and it's a lot better to win. But let's also not forget that we lost to Donald Trump, the worst person in America, in two of the last three presidential elections. And we're losing it because we are either completely abandoning the information space and how we communicate with critical parts of our coalition, or when we are engaging, they don't believe us. And why should they, when we don't say it with our chest? There is nothing about being a Democrat that we need to be embarrassed about. And this top-down approach of like, these are the three talking points, and we're only going to talk about the economy, or we're only going to talk about housing. We're not going to talk about immigration. We're not going to talk about due process. We're not going to talk about how we stand up for our trans brothers and sisters and the entire LGBTQ community. It's not okay. My approach to messaging is we all are at our most effective when we are speaking authentically. That is much more credible. And so, listen, I may talk about an issue different than Angela does, and the people we talk to might have different things that they care about the most. If we get lost in the sauce of trying to be like, well, Jay-Z, you're going to be in front of a young, you know, Latino audience, so you got to say these things, and then I try to match what I bring to what I'm supposed to say, they're not going to believe me. If I tell my story about why I think the Democratic Party is the only party for this moment, then they will believe me. And I think what we need to like start by recognizing is the anger and frustration that people feel is valid. Mm-hmm. Think about how angry you must be to be like, I don't care if Donald Trump's a felon. I don't care if he's got 13 billionaires in his cabinet. He still is at least something different. And what we need to, I think, do is talk about how rigged and fixed the system is. Like, the promise of the American dream is gone. It's gone. Like, when the three of us, who are all about the same age, like when we came out of high school, we could have confidence that whether we went to a 2 or 4 year school, into a trade, or into the military, by the time we were 40, we could probably own a home. We could probably have the start of a nest egg for retirement. The 20-year-old in our house, the 20-year-olds that, you know, that I recently coached, they look at that idea and they look at me like I'm crazy, because we have let big corporations nickel and dime us to death. Oh, you want to work? Cool. You only get 29 hours a week. Well, why 29? I want to work full time. Well, if you work 30 hours a week, then we got to give you health care. What? Of course people are upset. They should be upset. And when we get perceived as defenders of a status quo that is fundamentally not working, whether you are Black or white or Asian or, you know, live in a rural community or the city center, of course people should be upset, and we act like we don't even notice.
Well, that's one of the things that has been frustrating to me about the Democratic Party is this. They've been kind of cornered into this position where they've been defending a status quo that has no longer been working for people, because Donald Trump has painted himself as this like outsider change agent in 2016 and 2024. He couldn't really do that in 2020 because he was, you know, having to run on his record and he didn't win. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I do think that is a really important point that you raised there. We are talking here on Civic Media with Joe Zepecki. He is running to be the next chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. And, you know, there was another thing that I saw, you know, on Meet the Press yesterday. There was this moment with Senator Van Hollen responding to some criticism from Governor Gavin Newsom about, and he talked about the quote that he said was, "I think Americans are tired of elected officials or politicians who are all finger to the wind. Anybody who can't stand up for the Constitution and the rights and due process don't deserve to lead." Do you agree with him there?
With Van Hollen?
With Van Hollen, okay. Yeah.
I missed that. Yes, this is not about what's popular and going to win an election next November. This is about standing up for working people. I don't know if Albrego Garcia, if he had voted, who he voted for, I don't care. He has rights under the Constitution and they were violated. Like, full stop. And for everybody, like for Donald Trump and his administration to accuse Senator Van Hollen of grandstanding, talk about the pot calling the kettle black. Like, what are we talking about? And as I was having this conversation with somebody the other night, I said, well, you know, that now that Van Hollen's gone, maybe we don't need to send another delegation. I'm not so sure about that. I think if we let this story die down, that Albrego Garcia might die.
Yeah.
And we will never get him home. And to be clear, if the laws and authorities of this country say that Albrego Garcia should come back and stand trial, fine. Bring the evidence to the courtroom. But in this country, we have never been a place where you are guilty and renditionable until proven innocent. And that is how the Trump administration is acting. And if they can do it to him, they can do it to any of us. And yes, we can be afraid of that, but we also have agency in standing up and speaking out against it and holding elected officials' feet to the fire to put an end to it, period.
Yes. And I think that there are times that some, you know, going back to what you said about now's not the time to be timid, right? I think we all agree that there's like grave injustices that are happening, but the disalignment, I guess, is how we get there. And I think there's some folks that are like, we just need to take a more moderate stance. We need to negotiate behind the scenes, right? And there's, I think, like a huge kind of split in the Democratic Party, whether it's through Palestine or you're too left or what have you. And it's, I've seen some folks, even an elected official posted on Facebook today, basically trying to shut down some lefties for how they showed up in November. And I don't think that's particularly helpful. I think, you know, people can have their analysis, but how do you unite the party while also getting folks to be more bold at the same time?
Listen, this is the hardest part about being a big tent, because we need to have room in our coalition for people who start a conversation about what's happening in the Middle East by declaring it a genocide. And we need to have room for people who start it by saying Israel has the right to defend itself. Our coalition can and ought to encompass all of that, because the Democratic way is, I believe, the responsible way, as opposed to what this administration is doing. So my approach is, you bring the biggest table possible, you bring all the chairs you can to it, and we hash this stuff out as a family. And it's okay to have hard conversations. It's okay to disagree. My 95% of the time friend and supporter isn't my 100% of the time enemy and opponent, because they disagree with me on 5% of stuff. And so this is messy. Democracy is messy, and that's okay. But we have to recognize that everyone is acting in good faith here and trying to do the right thing. That's the way forward.
Joe Zepecki is our guest here on the Civic Media Radio Hours, and we will be back with one more segment with Mr. Zepecki after the break. Stick with us.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In one of his most bone-chilling orders to date, President Donald Trump directed the U.S. Department of Justice and other agencies to open an investigation of Christopher Krebs, the former head of the Cybersecurity Infrastructure and Security Agency. Krebs' alleged crime? Publicly refuting Trump's unfounded claims of widespread fraud in the 2020 election. Trump's April 9th memorandum reads in part, Krebs, through CISA, falsely and baselessly denied that the 2020 election was rigged and stolen, including by inappropriately and categorically dismissing widespread election malfeasance and serious vulnerabilities with voting machines, unquote. On November 12, 2020, Krebs had posted a joint statement from the Elections Infrastructure Government Coordinating Council and the Election Infrastructure Sector Coordinating Executive Committees, which said the November 3rd election was the most secure in American history, and there was no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. The two groups represent CISA, secretaries of state, state election directors, and numerous election technology and cybersecurity organizations. In addition to ordering the investigation, Trump stripped Krebs' security clearance and that of Sentinel One, the cybersecurity company where Krebs worked until his resignation April 16th. We have Trump's disturbing memo at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Ross calling in.
Thanks for your show. I'm just wondering if we're watching or witnessing a legal system that where what we thought was precedent is now going to be sort of cast away.
The reality is the question that you raise about the future and what are the implications when, in fact, the things we understood always to be bedrocks of our community, of our nation, are no longer that.
Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Radio Hours. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm your guest host this afternoon. Just a reminder once again that we will have a little bit of a lineup change coming here on the Civic Media airwaves later this week. In this 4 to 6 p.m. time slot will be the Maggie Dawn Show. Yes, it's moving back later in the afternoon so you can listen to the Maggie Dawn Show on your drive time. And so many more changes. Go check those out. I've got a story about it at the Recombobulation area even because we're pretty excited about it as well. And we are talking here with our guest for this portion of the program. It is Joe Zepecki. He is running to be the next chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Joe, thank you again for joining us here.
Thanks, man. Glad to do it.
So in the next hour of the show, and our guest in the to begin the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to be bringing on my friend Kevin Lade, who is an immigration attorney. And so we'll be getting into that issue a little bit more. Obviously, it has been a top of mind issue in recent weeks with the case of Kilmer Abrego Garcia. But I think more broadly, this is a criticism that I have had of the Democratic Party for several months now, going back to the campaign last year, has been that the party's inability to articulate what it stands for when it comes to immigration. I think there are, so much of the conversation just happens in the shadow of what Donald Trump says, of what the Republican Party says on this issue. And then I think it makes it so that it's always a reaction and never really saying what the party stands for. So in your mind, what do you think the Democratic Party should stand for when it comes to immigration?
We need to be a country that welcomes people from other parts of the world. We have been the shining light on a hill. We ought to remain that. We're the best and brightest and the smartest, and people who yearn for freedom can come to our country and become a part of the American fabric legally, in due process and due order. And if anyone doesn't think that we can't do that while securing our border and ensuring we know who is here and stopping the flow of drugs like fentanyl from coming into our country and hurting our communities, then you don't believe in America. I choose to believe in America. We can do big things. We have done big things before. What has been missing is the political will. since Ronald Reagan in the 80s, there has not been a modernization and upgrade to our immigration system. We were all 80s babies. The reason we like 90s music is because we didn't know any of the artists in the 80s, right? And so president after president, political parties, both of them share the blame for not getting this solved, where, you know, it gets this like, that's kind of dirty word, comprehensive immigration reform. Of course it should be comprehensive. We live in a complicated world, but at a time when American birth rates are declining, there are two paths here. There is the path that the Trump administration is pursuing, which is to make more white babies and to figure out ways through public policy to promote more women to bear children and to grow our population that way. I believe the Democratic Party way is to support families so they can make their own decisions about starting a family or expanding a family and being welcoming to people from across the world. That is how we became truly great and the greatest country in the world. And we need to get back to that, because this demonization that every problem is the fault of the family down the street who doesn't look like everybody else, it's nonsense. And like, we've been through it before. It's how people used to talk about the Irish and the Polish. So like, none of this is new, really. We just got to get serious about solving the problem. And if this Trump approach is anything, it is an invitation to get serious about comprehensive across the board updates and modernization of our immigration system.
But don't you think Republicans would just come back to that and say, hey, you're for open borders, you want more people to come here? We don't. Or whatever their line on the, you know, border security and all of that might be.
If we let Republicans, what they're going to say about us, define what we do and what we believe in, shame on us. When U.S. Senator Ron Johnson today is out here spouting 9/11 conspiracy theories and wants to reopen hearings to get to the bottom of what happened on 9/11, like,
well, he's just asking questions. He's always just asking
questions. We can't live our lives at, you know, worrying about what they will say. We have to say in more places, in more spaces, with more messengers from across our movement, what we are for. It is easy to be against what this administration is doing. We also need to be for something. And an immigration system that works is an awfully easy thing to be for, particularly because it strengthens and grows our economy in a way that tariffs and market uncertainty do not. And so like, that's the choice we got to lay out to people. Immigration is about our values, but it is also about how we grow an economy that actually works for people.
So do you think the Democratic Party needs to adopt a more pro-immigration platform?
Yes. Yes. What's the alternative?
Well, I think the alternative is what we've been seeing for many years, where it's kind of this kind of squishy middle ground where it's just, you know, you have Democratic politicians doing ads at the border or whatever it might be. I don't know if we've really had a politician to say, come out and say, like, we want, you know, I don't think the Obama administration really prioritized this. I think a lot of people have problems with what the Biden administration did on immigration. You know, I think this is one of the big challenges. Donald Trump said that immigration was his number one issue in the campaign, not the economy. Immigration. Mm-hmm. So I think it is really a big deal for the Democratic Party to figure out what it stands for and to be able to articulate it.
We're going to beat him on immigration. We're going to beat him on the economy. We're going to beat him on healthcare. And we're going to say it with our chest. That is the way. And if you are ready to revitalize the way the Democratic Party communicates with communities across our coalition, please visit joezepecki.com. Consider joining our team as we try to build a stronger Democratic Party that is capable of meeting this moment. And then you get to be on the same team as Angela. Angela, we love you. Thank you for your support, friend. And keep the hard questions coming. That was part of the deal.
I know.
She's going to come at me when I'm wrong.
Yep.
We all are. Well, Mr. Zepecki, thank you once again for joining us here on the Civic Media Radio Hours. We will be right back. And after the break, we will be joined by...
This is News from the Center, WRCE. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Milwaukee Film Festival Program Director Kirsten Larson and Tim Sowers from the Overture Center in Madison discusses their new lineup. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Mike Starr joins us here on Nightlight. Your timing, good fellas, Mike. What you just said was an ad-lib to De Niro. He's like, security, and you're just like, you're looking at him.
Well, that whole scene was improvised. And Paul Hip, he said, make sure you don't call it ad-libbing. It's improvisation. It was quite a process that Martin Scorsese put us through over a few days that it would come out like that. It wasn't just like, hey, how you doing?
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. Pope Francis, who battled pneumonia for the past few months, died today. The Vatican released his death certificate showing the 88-year-old suffered a cerebral stroke. ABC's Terry Moran has more on his life.
All those unforgettable moments of Pope Francis, the way that he went to a war zone, that he brought refugees back to his own house in Rome. And all those gestures, that's really his legacy, not hammered out in writing in church doctrine, but in the witness that he bore with his own personal example. The question is, you know, personalities come and go. It's doctrine that survives. And what will come next is a question before the church.
The Vatican released the Pope's will and also stated he wants his funeral to reflect his humble life. Following the Pope's public funeral, cardinals will convene to choose his successor. President Trump today ordering flags be lowered to half staff in his honor. The president will also attend the Pope's funeral. This is ABC News.